Love with Violin by Noel Coward, adapted for radio by Peggy Wells, with Aubrey Woods as Sebastian, Joyce Carey as Isabel Sorodine, and Patricia Routledge as Jane. Nude with Violin. Paris, 1956.
Parlez-vous anglais?
Yes, monsieur.
Thank God.
If you will come into the studio, monsieur.
Thank you.
This is a house of mourning, monsieur.
I know. That's why I came to Paris. I mean, I have to see Madame Sorodin. It's business. Urgent business.
Madame Sorodin has not yet returned from the funeral of her husband, and when she does, I feel that she will be in no mood to discuss business, however urgent. Pardon, monsieur.
Hello. J'écoute ici en Valide 26, Cancer.
Ah oui, monsieur.
Non, monsieur. Oui, monsieur, je suis complètement d'accord. Pour nous, c'est une tragédie, mais pour le monde, une catastrophe. Merci, monsieur. Au revoir, monsieur.
I guess you're Sebastian.
Your guess is correct, monsieur.
I have some notes on you.
Have you, indeed?
I represent an American magazine. My name is Clinton Preminger, Jr.
It would be all the same to me if you were Clinton Preminger, Sr.
Now, see here, I'm not an ordinary press reporter out for scoop headlines. I'm a serious writer.
I am delighted to hear it.
For over 2 years, I've been assembling material for a comprehensive study of Sorodin and his paintings. It's to be called Triton Among the Minnows.
Most appropriate.
I came by sea to give myself time to get all my notes in order, and when I landed at Cherbourg, I found that he died. Why, you can imagine the shock.
It was a shock to the whole world, monsieur. You say you have some notes on me. What sort of notes?
Merely factual. I have them here in my briefcase. Just a moment. There we are. S. Sebastian.
I sound like an Atlantic liner.
Sebastian Lacrioli, is that right?
Not quite, monsieur. There should be an accent on the first E in Lacrioli.
Oh, my French isn't too good.
You must persevere.
You entered the service of Paul Sorodin in July 1946 in the capacity of valet.
Correct.
You don't talk like a valet.
You can't have everything.
You are of mixed parentage.
You have a genius for understatement, monsieur.
Born in Martinique, date uncertain.
My whole life has been uncertain.
Deported from Syria in 1929, no offense specified.
The Syrians are terribly vague.
Imprisoned in Saigon, 1933, offense specified.
I remember it well.
Resident in England, 1936.
The happiest time of my life.
Landed in Los Angeles, 1937.
The saddest.
Married in Rio de Janeiro, 1939. Wife living.
With a customs officer.
From 1942 to 1946, proprietor of a rooming house in Mexico City.
Your delicacy does you credit, monsieur.
Well, those are all my notes on you up to date.
They're quite accurate as far as they go.
Oh, look, I'd like you to understand that by reading them to you, I had no intention of embarrassing you.
Thank you, you didn't.
Oh, I despise moral attitudes. I believe that life is for living, don't you?
It is difficult to know what else one could do with it.
Personally, I have no inhibitions. I took a course of psychiatry at Yale.
That explains everything.
I've studied Jung and Freud and Adler, all the big boys. I think that every man should do what he wants to do.
A tolerant philosophy, monsieur, but apt to lead to untidiness.
Say, where did you learn to speak such good English?
The Esplanade Hotel, Bournemouth.
Hey, what were you doing there?
Looking after an elderly lady. No offense specified.
You liked working for Paul Sorodin?
Very much indeed, monsieur. He was a great man.
Was he difficult, temperamental? I mean, did he fly into violent rages?
Oh, frequently.
Did he ever strike you?
No. He once threw a pork chop at me, but it only broke the clock.
Oh, excuse me, I'd like to make a note of that.
I really think, Monsieur Preminger, that as Madame Sorodin may return from Père Lachaise at any moment, it would be tactful of you to leave now. The presence here of a stranger will be an intrusion upon her grief.
Grief? Sorodin deserted her in 1926, didn't he?
1925.
And she hasn't seen him since?
I believe they once met by accident in the Galerie Lafayette.
Well, I shouldn't imagine she'd be suffering much grief after all those years.
He was her husband and father of her children.
Why did she never divorce him?
She is a woman of the highest principles, monsieur, and a Catholic.
Hey, can you beat that?
People have tried, monsieur, but seldom with unqualified success.
You know, I like you, Sebastian.
Thank you.
See, I really am crazy to meet Madame Sorodin. Can I stay until she arrives if I promise to go the moment you tip me the wink?
It would be as much as my place is worth.
Ah, but your place can't be worth much now anyway, can it?
That remains to be seen.
Are you taken care of in the will?
Mr. Sorodin left no will.
Gosh, that means that everything will go to her, doesn't it?
I presume so.
No wonder she came herring over to Paris for the public funeral.
Your flippancy appalls me, monsieur.
Do you like her?
I'm in no position to say, having only just met her.
Does she like you?
I doubt it, monsieur. Paul Sorradine was more than my employer. He was my friend. I traveled with him far and wide. He found me good company. We laughed together, drank together, took our pleasures lightly. Whether Madame Sorradine likes me or not, I am fairly sure, monsieur, that she could never approve of me. Our views of life are so diametrically opposed.
I'll bet the hell they are.
Pardon, monsieur. Allô, j'écoute, ici Amélie Francis 45. Ah, si, senor. Ah, no, senor. Si, senor, estamos completamente de acuerdo. Para nosotros es una tragedia, pero para el mundo es una catástrofe. Muchas gracias, senor. Hasta luego, senor.
Hey, how many languages do you speak?
14, including dialects. My Swahili is a bit rusty at the moment. There are so few opportunities of speaking it in Paris.
Was Sorradin a linguist?
Only when he was drunk.
Was he a heavy drinker?
In certain circumstances, yes. But sometimes he would go for hours without touching a drop.
Hey, are you laughing at me by any chance?
A little, Monsieur Preminger.
Why? What is there about me that's so funny?
It's your naivety, monsieur. If, as you say, you intend to write a serious biography of Paul Sorradin, I cannot help feeling that your approach should be a trifle less, ingenuous.
Oh, my approach is logical. Facts first and malices afterwards. Look, you must know more about him than anybody. You could help me a lot if only you would.
And why should I?
Oh, for the sake of posterity, if for no other reason.
Sorradin will be remembered even without the aid of your magazine, Monsieur Preminger. And within a few years, your biography of him will be only one among hundreds. Ah, here they are. You had better go.
5 minutes. Just 5 minutes. You promised.
I did no such thing.
Oh, please, I swear I'll go the moment you give me the hint.
What sort of hint can I possibly give you?
Well, offer me a cigarette. I shall refuse it and leave at once.
This is all highly irregular.
Oh, please. Please be a pal. It means so much to me. And call me at the hotel later, and we can make a date for dinner.
Which hotel?
The George V.
I might have known it.
Okay. Okay.
It was all very impressive and really very moving. But I'm thankful that it's over.
I know I am.
Same here. Poor father.
And Sebastian, who is this?
Monsieur Clinton Preminger, Jr., monsieur. He represents an American magazine.
I thought my instructions were quite clear.
Oh, please don't blame him, sir. It's all my fault. He tried to make me go, but I wouldn't.
I'm afraid I must ask you to leave immediately. Mrs. Sorradin, her daughter, and her son and daughter-in-law are just back from the funeral of Mr. Sorradin. This is a moment when privacy should be respected.
Are you Mr. Jacob Friedland?
I am.
I have some notes on you.
Kindly show Mr. Preminger out, Sebastian.
Just a moment, please. Mrs. Sorradin, I appeal to you.
Oh.
I am writing a series of articles on your late husband's work. Oh, he was a great man, a giant. I know that you've lived apart from him for many years, but you must be proud to bear his name. You must still feel in your heart a little tenderness for him. You who loved him when he was young, when he was on the threshold of his greatness. You who once held him in your arms.
Cigarette, Monsieur Preminger.
Thanks.
Mr. Preminger.
And you, Mr. Friedland, you who braved the ignorant scorn of his early critics and set his feet so firmly on the ladder of success. You, I feel sure, will not turn a deaf ear to me.
Light, Monsieur Preminger.
Thanks. Please help me, Mr. Friedland. In the same spirit that you've helped and encouraged talent all your life. Mrs. Sorradin, I appeal to you again.
Oh, dear. This is really most awkward. I don't know what to say. Jane, Colin.
I'll deal with this. Now, look here, young man. I don't care what magazine you represent or who you are or where you come from, but if you don't leave this house within 50 seconds, I'll throw you out. Now, just a moment, Colin. I fully appreciate your position, Mr. Preminger, and I will do all I can to help you, on condition that you leave us alone now in the private sorrow that has come to us.
It's not a private sorrow, it's a public disaster.
Another cigarette, Monsieur Preminger.
What the devil do you keep offering him cigarettes for?
Cigarette, my God. Sorry, Sebastian. Goodbye.
Good heavens.
The man's obviously a lunatic.
No, madame, merely an enthusiast. He took a course of psychiatry at Yale.
What's Yale?
It's a university in America, Pamela.
Oh.
Just like Cambridge, you know, only quite different.
You'd have been better advised to take a course in manners. You had no business to let him in, Sebastian. I am very displeased. I suppose he bribed you.
Really, Colin?
I am not in the habit of accepting bribes, sir.
I'm sure you're not, Sebastian.
Thank you, Miss Jane.
Where did you learn to speak such perfect English?
In Bournemouth, miss. I was in service there some years ago.
Domestic service?
Some of my duties were almost overwhelmingly domestic. May I offer, mesdames, messieurs, some refreshment?
Yeah, I must say, I should love a drink. It's been a very tiring day.
Champagne, miss.
Yes, please. That would be lovely.
Good Lord, a magnum. Where did that come from?
It was given me for a Christmas present by Mr. Sorodine. I wish to contribute in my own humble way to this melancholy but historic occasion. I hope Madame will accept it in the spirit in which it is offered.
Oh, really? I hardly know what to say. Thank you, Sebastian.
Madame.
Hand me my bag, Pamela, dear. Yes. If I'm going to have champagne, I must take off my hat.
Ah. I would like to repudiate the black bow on the bottle. It was the maid's idea. Marie Celeste has an exaggerated sense of the fantastic.
Here, Mother, drink up. It'll do you good. I doubt that, Jane. Champagne really doesn't agree with me. The last time I had any was at poor Etty's wedding. You remember, Colin. Oh. I was ill for days.
Perhaps it was a bad year.
Oh, indeed it was. Everything went wrong.
Come on, everyone. You must drink too, Sebastian.
Thank you, miss. I will be honored.
By all means. Fill a glass for him, Colin.
May I be permitted to propose a toast?
Oh, Lord.
Shut up, Colin. Please do, Sebastian.
I drink to the memory of my master, Paul Sorodine. A man of charm and humor and courage. A man who, until death, smudged out the twinkle in his eye, contrived to enjoy life to the full, and at the same time remain a hero to his own valley. Madame, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Sorodine. Ah. And now, will you please excuse me?
Well, really, what a funny thing to do, dashing his glass to the ground like that.
A little theatrical, perhaps, dear, but after all, he is a foreigner.
Oh, I can't stand him. It's no use. I just can't stand him. He gives me the creep.
I rather like him, Pamela.
Oh, really, Jane, what is there about him that you could possibly like?
He has charm, I think.
Charm? I wouldn't trust him an inch.
Father was obviously devoted to him. I fear your poor father was often devoted to undesirable characters.
We have no proof that Sebastian is an undesirable character, Mother. We met him for the first time 2 days ago.
You've only to look at him. I know the type. Oily.
I like what he said about Father.
I know that over the years you've built up in your mind a romantic conception of your father, Jane, darling.
He was a romantic man.
But I do think you might spare a little of your loyalty for your poor mother, rather than devote it all to the man who betrayed her and made her life a hell upon earth.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, darling mother, what absolute nonsense. You lived with Father for exactly 6 years. Admittedly, your life may have been a bit difficult for that very brief period, but since then it has been extremely comfortable.
I have no intention of pursuing this discussion any further, Jane. It's really most unsuitable, considering why we're here and everything. Did you love my father, Jacob?
His impact on my world, the world of art, was stupendous. His influence far-reaching and incalculable.
But were you fond of him, as a man, I mean? Did you look forward to seeing him, to dining with him? Was he gay and attractive and good company?
He could be all those things when he chose.
Oh, but his paintings. Well, I know I'm ignorant and don't know anything about art, really, but what do they mean? I've never been able to understand.
Go into the Tate Gallery, my dear, and look at Sarodine's portrait of Marjorie. Stand before it quietly, receptively. Stand for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours if need be, and then go away.
3 hours is an awfully long time.
It takes a lifetime to appreciate a masterpiece.
Is Portrait of Marjorie the one with all those rings and dots?
It is the apotheosis of his circular period, one of the few great modern paintings in the world.
But why is it called Portrait of Marjorie? It isn't a portrait at all. I mean, it isn't like anyone or anything.
It is Sorodine's abstract conception of a woman called Marjorie.
Marjorie who?
Does it matter, Pamela?
The fact remains that the Tate bought Portrait of Marjorie for £3,000 in 1936. It would be worth triple the amount today.
Well, it's beyond me, that's all I can say. I can't make head or tail of it.
Sorodine's creative genius was concentrated into three great periods. The first, what is now described as his Farouche period, lasted from 1927 until the early 30s. His first exhibition caused an uproar, but jeers and catcalls. One elderly art critic struck at one of the canvases with his umbrella. A lady from Des Moines, Iowa, fainted dead away and had to be taken to the American hospital.
Poor thing. That's where they took poor Edith Carrington when she had that dreadful rash.
The circular period was an evolution and a reaction at the same time. Through the dark years of the war, I had no message from him. Indeed, I imagined he must be dead. It was not until he returned to Paris in 1946 that I realized the full significance of the private war he had been waging with his own genius, a struggle that resulted in the greatest victory of his career, the Jamaican period.
All those fat negresses.
Yes, all those fat negresses, and all that primitive simplicity and glorious color as well. The first painting he showed me on that fabulous day is now in the Louvre.
Girl with breadfruit.
No, boy with plantain. Girl with breadfruit is in Prague.
That was the one we used for our Christmas cards the year before last. You remember, Colin.
Oh, yes.
Your Aunt Frieda wrote indecent on it in red ink and sent it back.
More champagne, Mother?
No, thank you, dear.
I'd like some more, and I'm sure Jacob would. He's had a horrid week dealing with everything.
You've been most considerate, Jacob, to make all the arrangements and support me through today's ordeal. I could never have endured it without you.
You really shouldn't have come, Mother.
Nonsense, dear. It was my duty.
Personally, I think it was unnecessary. Nobody was deceived.
What a disagreeable thing to say, Jane. I'm sure I had no wish to deceive anyone.
Jane's been in a bad mood all day. Argumentative and thoroughly tiresome. Why don't you snap out of it, Jane?
I haven't been anything of the sort. But I hated us being here. I hated the whole business. All those crowds and press cameras and professional mourners. I felt ashamed.
It was most important from every point of view for Paul Saradine's widow and children to be present at his funeral.
Every point of view but father's.
Really, Jane?
He'd have thought we were hypocrites, as indeed we were.
I resent your attitude, Jane. Your father was my husband.
He wouldn't have been if only you had divorced him years ago when he wanted you to.
Once and for all, Jane, I forbid you to talk like that. You're perfectly well aware that even if I had been willing to divorce your father, to have done so would directly have contravened the canons of my faith.
Yes, but really, Mother,
I know that you've grown apart from us during the last few years. I expect it's my fault. Everything is always my fault. But I must say I've been deeply grieved by your attitude to me throughout all this trying ordeal. I feel utterly exhausted. Colin, will you and Pamela take me back to the hotel? I have no more to say.
I'm sorry, Mother. I didn't mean to grieve you, but I do wish you could see my point just a little.
You should never have taken that journalism course at the Polytechnic. It's ruined your character.
How funny. You are funny, really.
I'm sure I don't see anything to laugh at.
Are you really cross or only pretending to be?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, you've been pretending to be sad all day. I see no reason why you shouldn't be pretending to be upset now.
Come, Colin.
You can't possibly go away before we've decided what's to be done about Sebastian.
Sebastian? What are you talking about? Why should anything be done about him?
Father left no will. Sebastian served him faithfully during his last years. Something will have to be done about
it. I expect he's taking jolly good care to feather his own nest.
Jacob, don't you agree with me?
There is certainly something in what you say, Jane. Pay him a month's wages and good riddance.
That's not enough. We're leaving first thing in the morning. It must be settled before we go.
I agree with Colin. Give him a month's wages and send him away with a flea in his ear.
He must have a pension.
Pension? You must be out of your mind.
It's a question of common decency. Mother, you, as father's widow, cannot afford to appear mean in the eyes of the world. You can't repay his years of devotion to father with a month's wages. What do you think, Jacob?
In the circumstances, I think Jane is right, but I'm damned if I do.
Neither do I.
Is that your considered opinion, Jacob?
Yes. I think he should be given the choice of a pension or a lump sum, whichever he prefers.
Oh, dear. Well, if you really feel it's necessary, I suppose we must agree.
Mm.
Will you interview him?
Oh, willingly, but I think it would be more tactful if you told him yourself.
Well, I've already told you. I'm tired, Jacob. I want to go back to the hotel and lie down.
He's a very articulate man, Isabel. There's nothing to prevent him giving all sorts of interviews to the press. Oh. A gesture from you at this particular moment would, I'm sure, be a wise move.
Very well. Ring for him, Colin.
Bear up, Mother. We can always rely on you to say the right thing.
Thank you, dear.
You rang, Madame?
Yes, Sebastian. I wish to speak to you for a moment.
At your service, Madame.
First of all, I want to thank you for the loyal service you gave my late husband. I would like to say that I find your obvious devotion to him touching, really, most touching.
Thank you, madame.
As you are no doubt aware, Mr. Sorodin left no will.
Yes, madame. I am aware of that.
And realizing that his sudden death might have left you in an embarrassing situation...
In what way, madame?
Financially.
Ah. No, the financial aspect had not yet occurred to me. Doubtless it will later.
Oh.
I have frequently been embarrassed in my life, madame. More often by lack of taste than by lack of money.
In consideration of your services to my late husband, Mr. Friedland and I have decided to offer you the choice of a sum of money to be paid in the near future or a small pension. Which would you prefer?
Without wishing to be discourteous, madame, neither.
Well, really.
Please believe me when I say how profoundly I appreciate your kindness and consideration. To you, Miss Jane, and to you, Mr. Friedland, I must also express my gratitude. I happened to be listening outside the door just now when the matter was being discussed.
Typical. Exactly what I would have expected.
That was disgraceful of you, Sebastian.
You will understand, therefore, how much it pains me in the face of such spontaneous generosity to be the bearer of what I fear will be most disturbing news.
Disturbing news? What do you mean?
Although Monsieur Sorodin left no will, he did leave a letter.
A letter?
A personal letter, addressed to me. It was written in the early hours of the morning of January the 1st of this year and was witnessed by the maid Marie-Celeste and by the head waiter from the Grâce à Dieu. He had organized the catering.
Catering?
We had given a little party. Oh, nothing grandiose, you understand. Just a small gathering of intimate friends, quite informal.
Now, never mind about that. What's all this leading up to? Blackmail.
Yes.
I can smell it a mile off. Where is this letter?
In a strong box in the Royal Bank of Canada, but I do have a copy of it.
Let me see it, please.
Ah, no, monsieur. No. That would be a betrayal of confidence. Also, it is very long. It contains many irrelevances of a personal nature. I am, however, perfectly prepared to read you any extracts that are pertinent to the present circumstances.
What is the meaning of all this? What are you up to?
I'm not up to anything. I am merely embarrassed. For reasons that will be only too apparent later on.
Come to the point, please. Read the letter.
Have I madame's permission?
I suppose so. Jacob, what am I to say?
Sebastian, you have madame's permission to proceed.
There's something fishy about this.
Shut up, Colin.
Go on.
Very well. Actually, I would have preferred to read it to you or to your lawyer in private, Monsieur Friedland. However, if you insist, I have no choice. Just a moment, please. It is amongst some papers in my pocket. Ah. Ready?
Oh, for God's sake, get on with it.
Very well. My dear Sebastian, in case the validity of this personal letter to you should ever be questioned, I will begin it by stating that I am sane and healthy and in full possession of my faculties. Actually, he did have a slight head cold at the time.
Never mind about that. Go on.
The news in your letter must be very bad, Sebastian. You're so obviously enjoying yourself.
Not exactly bad, Miss Jane. Shall we say, startling?
Read it.
In the event of my demise, I have decided to leave no will and testament for the simple reason that I have nothing to leave anyone beyond a few personal effects. In recognition of your loyal service to me since July the 13th, 1946, I should have liked to have bequeathed you a handsome emolument, or at least to have repaid the 270,000 francs I owe you. However, you will doubtless be able to recover this paltry sum from that stingy old bastard, Jacob Friedland.
Continue.
The whole of my estate will inevitably revert to my loving wife as a just and fitting recompense for the monumental lack of understanding which she has lavished on me since we first met on Armistice Night 1918, when, owing to an excess of patriotism and inferior sauterne, she consented to join her life to mine.
Mother, I really think
Hush,
you shouldn't...
Colin. I would like to hear the rest of the letter.
Perhaps it would be advisable, Isabel, for you to return to the hotel with Pamela and Jane. I can deal with this.
No, Jacob. My husband's insults, even from beyond the grave, are powerless to hurt me.
Good for you, Mother. Whatever you wish, my dear. Go on, Sebastian.
Monsieur, I am well aware that thanks to Mr. Friedland's unscrupulous business acumen, my canvases have achieved a commercial value grossly out of proportion to their merits. In fairness to him, however, I must state that I have reaped considerable financial benefit from his quite remarkable capacity for deceiving the public. My wife and family, also thanks to him, have received over the years a fair percentage of the profits. There now comes a rather long dissertation on the iniquities of the marriage and divorce laws. Would you like me to read it or to skip to the more important part of the letter, the clue, as we say in France?
Oh, skip it and go on.
Very well. In consideration of the fact that when this letter is ultimately made public, I shall be in my grave, I feel it to be only fair that the world of art should receive from me one final and unequivocal statement, which is that with the exception of a watercolor of a dog executed at Broadstairs when I was 11 years old, I have never painted a picture of any sort or kind in the whole course of my life.
My God, never painted a picture. It's not going to be true. It can't possibly be true.
You really must try to eat something, Jacob. Shall I go into the kitchen and ask Marie-Celeste to scramble some eggs?
Oh, it would choke me.
If the man doesn't want to eat, Jane, why badger him?
Jacob must keep up his strength, Colin. Violent shocks to the nervous system are terribly devitalizing. Besides which, he's talked himself into a state of exhaustion.
And a fat lot of good it's done. It would have been much better if we'd all gone home hours ago when I suggested it. We shall all feel much more able to cope with everything after a good sleep.
A good sleep? Are you mad?
Certainly not. I'm beginning to think that Colin and I are the only sane ones among a lot of you. We always thought Sorrelin's pictures were fakes anyway and said so, didn't we, Colin?
Yes, we did, Pamela.
Without wishing to be rude, Colin, I must frankly say that where works of art are concerned, I could never consider your or your wife's opinion to be in the least valid or even interesting.
Here, now, steady on.
Please do not think that this is in any way intended as a reproach. We all aim to be specialists in our own milieu. I've no doubt whatever that you are an expert on military strategy and that your wife is an accomplished horsewoman. I'm equally convinced that neither of you could distinguish a Picasso from a hole in the ground.
At least we'd know the hole in the ground was a hole in the ground.
Well, I wish you'd both find one and fall down it.
Ha ha. Bloody funny.
Colin, you know I don't like you to use that word.
Do stop baiting Jacob. He's very upset.
I don't see why he should insult Colin and me, however upset he is.
I wish you'd all stop bickering. My head's splitting.
Oh, mother.
It can't be true. It must be a trick, some low blackmailing trick. I refuse to believe that it is true.
Nothing can be proved until you actually see Father's letter. And you can't possibly do that until tomorrow morning because the bank's shut.
Do you believe it, Jane?
Yes, I'm afraid I do.
Do you realize what it would mean if that letter got into the press? Do you realize the full implication of this ghastly situation?
The letter might be a forgery. We can't tell until the handwriting is identified.
Even if it is a forgery, my reputation would be ruined forever if the papers got hold of it.
They must see to it that they don't.
Oh, this is a nightmare.
If it is true that Father didn't paint the pictures, it stands to reason that someone else did. The first thing to do is to find out who.
Try ringing up the nearest asylum.
Do be quiet, Colin.
That's a very sensible suggestion. Whoever painted Portrait of Marjorie must be as mad as a heather.
Oh, Colin, you do make me laugh sometimes.
Really, I think
it would be more helpful, Colin, if you continue to amuse your wife in the library.
I'm quite comfortable here, thanks.
Do you think Sebastian knows who painted them? I know he swore he didn't, but he might have been lying.
Perhaps he did them himself.
Whoever painted those pictures was a genius. That is my considered opinion. Not only is it my opinion, it is the verdict of all the finest art critics in the civilized world.
You are quite convinced, Jacob, that all Father's pictures were painted by one person.
Or a chimpanzee with a brush in its mouth.
Oh, Colin!
I think, dear, that considering we only laid your father to rest this afternoon, it is not in very good taste to call him a chimpanzee.
I didn't, Mother. He didn't paint the pictures anyhow.
That has yet to be proved.
Assuming the worst, that Father's letter was true, so far, nobody outside this room knows it.
Except Sebastian.
Oh, Sebastian can be dealt with.
He can sell it to the highest bidder.
Exactly. We must bid higher.
We'll be laying ourselves open to a charge of defrauding the public.
That can't be helped. The public has been defrauded for years, and it might just as well go on being for a little longer.
I cannot agree to that, Jane. I'm sorry, but it's against all my principles.
Oh, Mother, really?
Is it in accordance with your principles to bring ruin and disgrace on a man who has always tried to be your friend?
What nonsense, Jacob, dear. We all know it isn't your fault.
It doesn't matter whose fault it is. My whole reputation is in jeopardy.
Well, you must admit that it was a little silly of you to let Paul pull the wool over your eyes in the first place, wasn't it?
Well,
why, I know we're all liable to make mistakes sometimes, but surely it's better, once we know we've been wrong, to come bravely out into the open and say so, don't you think?
No, Isabel, I do not. Nor have I any intention of coming bravely out into the open and saying that I was wrong when I know with every fibre of my being that I was right. I still maintain that whoever painted those pictures had genius.
Well, I'm afraid that I can't agree with you. When you showed me that first picture of Paul's years ago, it was as much as I could do not to laugh outright, really it was. That awful-looking woman with a pot on her head.
Market woman in Algiers has been acknowledged to be a masterpiece.
You still can't convince me that women go to market stark naked, even in Algiers.
This is all rather beside the point, Mother. Don't you see that we must stand by Jacob?
I am very sorry, but my conscience would not permit me to uphold, even for a brief period, what I know to be a lie.
I agree with Mother. Well, let's be honest and above board. It pays in the long run.
That's exactly what it won't do. If this becomes public, not only will poor Jacob be done for, but the whole of Father's estate will amount to nothing. We must be practical. What possible good could be achieved by bursting this scandal wide open? Surely it's our first duty to find whoever it was Father bribed to ghost paint for him, and then it'll be up to Jacob to see that justice is done.
Justice?
Of course. Jacob must guarantee that whoever painted the pictures will ultimately get the recognition he deserves. I am right, aren't I, Jacob?
Yes, my dear.
Oh, I wish Father Flanagan were here.
Well, see what he could do if he were here.
I know that you don't like Father Flanagan, Jane, but you can take my word for it. He's a very wonderful man, almost a mystic.
What we need at the moment is a clairvoyant.
For once, I agree with Jane.
Oh, Colin.
Even dear old Mr. Flint would be a damn sight more useful than Father Flanagan. He may not be a clairvoyant, but he is a trained lawyer.
Dear old Mr. Flint wanted to come with us, but he couldn't leave his wife.
Unlike Father.
For shame.
Why don't we telephone the dear old Mr. Flint and put all our cards on the table?
I can explain to you why we cannot telephone to dear old Mr. Flint or Father Flanagan. It is because we have all agreed not to divulge what has happened to a living soul.
Mother hasn't.
Oh, you must agree, Isabel. I implore you to agree.
This isn't getting us anywhere. Why don't we all go back to the hotel?
Yes. Did you ring, sir?
No, I did not.
How strange. I could have sworn I heard a bell. Perhaps it was a bicycle. Is there anything I can do for you?
Yes, Sebastian, a great deal.
At your service always, miss.
Oh, Lord, we're off again.
You said a few hours ago that Father's letter was witnessed by Marie Celeste and a head waiter.
Jules Miss. 80 bis Rue de Perpignan.
Can he speak English?
Oh, no. I believe he did pick up a little American during the liberation, but only a few idiomatic words such as okay and demi-tasse.
Well, yes. He didn't read the letter. They neither of them read it.
No. They only signed it as witnesses.
Good. To your certain knowledge, no one outside this room knows its contents.
To my certain knowledge, I deposited it in the bank myself in a sealed package.
Had you any suspicion, when you first entered my father's employ, that he wasn't a painter at all?
None, Miss Jane. He explained to me that complete solitude was essential to him when he was working. That was the reason he gave for never painting in the studio. He said it was merely a facade to impress dealers. Later, of course, when he knew me better, he took me into his confidence.
Where did he work then, or pretend to work?
Saint-Cloud. He rented a studio there under a false name. He used to leave here in the mornings as gay as a lark, and return in the evening exhausted.
Every morning?
Oh, no. Only when, as he said, he felt the urge.
Saint-Cloud? Where in Saint-Cloud?
Numero 16, impasse de Louis-Philippe.
Why didn't you tell us this before?
You never asked me.
Have you the keys?
Yes, monsieur.
Where are they?
With the letter in the Royal Bank of Canada.
Is the studio empty? Is there anything in it?
Only his remaining canvas.
What?
Now, Jacob.
His last great masterpiece, monsieur. Nude with violin. Excuse me.
Remaining canvas, new with violin.
Calm, Jacob, for heaven's sake, keep a calm.
Cunning, black-meaning scoundrel, I'll have him arrested. I'll have him flung into jail.
Jacob, pull yourself together. You must pull yourself together.
Monsieur.
Forgive me for intruding, but I just had this cable from my editor.
I don't care if you've had a cable from your president. Please go away, Mr. Preminger.
It's urgent. It's about Sheridan. Where is it?
Where's what?
Sheridan's posthumous masterpiece, Nude with Violin.
What?
The greatest picture he ever painted. Oh, the news broke in New York yesterday. All the dealers are crazy with excitement. Elmore P. Riskin, the director of the Manhattan Museum of Modern Art, has hopped a plane and is arriving tomorrow. You must let me see it, Mr. Friedland. My magazine is prepared to carry it on the cover page in color.
Go away, Mr. Clinton Preminger, Jr. Just go away.
Oh, please, please. I implore you to let me see it. It may make the whole difference to my approach.
Approach to what?
Everything.
Mr. Friedland is very upset, Mr. Preminger. Please do as he asks and go away. It is quite out of the question for you to see the picture.
But why? Why?
It is being varnished.
Thank you, Sebastian.
This is terribly important to me.
It is terribly important to all of us, Monsieur. Excuse me.
Mrs. Sheridan, I appeal to you.
Mr. Preminger, you really must stop appealing to my mother. It flusters her.
Now, see here, Preminger,
you can't... Just a moment, Colin. I will try to arrange for you to see the picture in the morning, Mr. Preminger.
Oh, do you think it'll be dry?
I can't promise anything. But if you will go away quietly now, I assure you that I will do all I can.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll go. Goodbye.
Americans are curious, aren't they? So abrupt.
What are we to do now? If New York had the news yesterday, London will have had it today. I shall have all the English dealers pestering the life out of me. Alaric Craigie, Beddington.
A Princess Pavlikoff has called Miss Friedman. She seemed agitated.
A princess who?
Pavlikoff. As the name implies, she is Russian.
What does she want?
To see you, Mr. Friedman. She said it is urgent.
Send her away. I can't possibly see anyone now.
I think in the circumstances that it would be wise to grant her a brief interview.
What do you mean?
She says she is an old friend of Mr. Sorodine's. She apparently knew him many years ago at the beginning of his career.
I really don't feel equal to meeting any more strangers at the moment. Colin? Pamela?
Sheridan, Sebastian.
Volontiers, mademoiselle.
Really, Jane, you're being very high-handed. I don't know what's come over you. You've been ordering a sergeant shouting at us all day long like a sergeant.
This woman may be able to help us, darling, don't you see?
Princess Pavlikoff.
Mr. Friedland.
I am Jacob Friedland.
Oh, yes. I see now that you could not be anyone else.
I fear I don't understand.
Oh, it is no matter. This lady, you will please make presentations.
This is Paul Sheridan.
How do you do? Of course. I see now that you could not be anyone else. Oh, my God.
I beg your pardon.
Eyes. Not mouth. Mouth is different, but eyes.
I am Jane Sheridan. This is my brother Colin, and this is his wife.
Your brother's wife is beautiful. Quite, quite beautiful. The true English mole. Magnificent.
Thank you.
Florence Nightingale, Gainsborough, Clive of India. Oh, what a country. I really must sit down.
Please do.
Is there brandy in-house?
Certainly, madame.
I understand that you wish to see me urgently.
I do, most urgently.
Your brandy, madame la princesse.
Thank you.
That'll be all, Sebastian.
Very good, monsieur. I shall be just outside the door if anyone should need me.
You are devoted to that man.
We hardly know him. He was my father's servant.
Oh, do not trust him.
Thanks, we don't. You say you wish to see me, madame.
Oh, it is delicate matter. Perhaps there is tiny bathroom where we talk privately.
Does it concern the late Paul Sheridan?
Oh, yes.
In that case, it also concerns everyone in this room. You may speak freely.
Ah. You wish me to say what I say before witnesses. Is idea that?
No, not exactly. You see, we are all most anxious to discover as much as possible about my father's earlier years. As you may know, he left my mother in 1925, and we've had no actual contact with him since.
I cannot feel, Jane, that our private family affairs can be of any interest to Princess Pav...
No, Pav... Pavlikoff. It is what you call maiden name. I took it back when my husband showed true colors and went to Dusseldorf with my cousin Marcia. Oh, he was heartless pig called Flanagan.
Oh, dear.
Irish.
In Ireland, Flanagan is a very common name.
He was a very common man.
We are very eager to hear whatever you have to tell us about Paul Saradine, madame. But it is getting late, and we are all rather tired.
Very well. Business. Oh, you will not mind if I speak truth, Mrs. Sorodin. It is all long ago, but I would not wish to wound your heart.
Please go on. I am fully prepared for whatever revelations you care to make.
Oh, fabulous, so wonderful, what a country, what a race. Sir Walter Arley, William Pete, Christina Rossetti.
Please say what you have to say, Princess. You knew Sorodin?
Yes. Oh, yes, I knew him.
Well?
How well can I really know anyone? We are all strangers, really lonely strangers, groping about in dark. We no face, we no body, we no hands, but soul. That is the most different now.
Yes, most different. Therefore, we needn't discuss it at the moment, need we? When did you know him?
He was my lover from 1925 until 1929.
Your lover? Where did you first meet?
Here, in Paris. I was a student at École des Beaux-Arts. He trod on my foot in metro, and I bit him.
Bite him?
Oh, yes. Yes, I always bite people when I am suddenly astonished.
What were you studying at the Beaux-Arts?
Sculpture. Oh, feeling of clay intoxicates me. I go quite mad sometimes and dance and shout very, very loud.
When did you start painting?
Painting. So you know. You have known all the time you have been most sly boots.
I don't know anything, but I want to. I want to know all that you can tell me. It may be of vital importance.
It was Sorodin who made me give up sculpting. Clay drove him crazy all over house, nothing but clay. Then one day we had great, great drama, and he threw it all in sea. So I leave him in Algiers and go over mountains to Busada in desert.
Algiers?
Have you ever been to Busada, Monsieur Friedland?
No, I have not.
But don't go. It's ruined now.
When did you start painting?
When Sorodin came to find me and we were lovers again and live in a house in La Napoule.
La Napoule.
Ah, you remember now.
Remember what?
Mr. Friedland first met Sorodin in La Napoule. His car break at bottom of hill one day when I'd gone missing boss. He comes to house and asks for water. And there was Sorodin in yellow shirt. And together they drink cognac. And when I come back in evening, all those silly, silly paintings Sorodin make me do are no more there.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Friedland buy all paintings except two. One of lemons hanging from chandelier and other triangular fish head on cushion. They're not quite finished, but both he bought later. I did fish painting with nail scissors because I had broken brush.
It is now in the Chicago Museum of Modern Art.
Oh, I don't know what happened to a picture of stupid old lemons.
It is the treasured possession of one of the greatest connoisseurs in Buenos Aires.
It is a great joke, no?
No.
Sorodin would laugh if he were alive now.
Oh, but he would.
How many paintings did you do for my father altogether?
Oh, I cannot remember that. Great many, great, great many. He made me go on and on and on. That was why I leave him, really. He thought it was because I loved darling Egmont, but really, it was smell of turpentine. You like turpentine smell, Mrs. Sorodin?
Well, no. I suppose I don't, actually. I mean, I don't really know.
Oh, after a long while painting, believe me, it makes sick.
You left Sorodin and went away with this Egmont?
That is true.
And you never painted again?
Oh, my God, no. Egmont hates painting. Egmont Mécanique.
Good for Egmont.
We start garage near Grenoble. Fine business. Many tourists. Route to Napoléon.
Did Sorodin try to prevent you leaving him?
Oh, yes. For 3 weeks we have the scenes. Sorodin wish kill Egmont. Egmont wish kill Sorodin. I cry. Everyone cry. Then Sorodin give in and make me sign letter.
Huh? Letter?
Yes, I have copy here in bag. Real letter in Swiss bank, Brussels. Egmont, witness letter. Then everyone shake hands, drink cognac, and we go.
Is Egmont alive?
I think no. He went Congo 1934 to have better garage, but Congo bad business for garage.
Was the letter a form of contract? Did Sardin pay you money?
Oh, yes. Every year until war, then no more.
Please show me the letter.
Certainly. There you are.
Oh, this is appalling.
True letter in Sorodin's handwriting.
tight copy more easy to understand.
What's in the letter? Is it in English?
Yes. Yes, it's in English.
Tell us the worst, Jacob.
The gist of it is that Madame Pavlikoff agrees to renounce all claims on her paintings. She also swears solemnly in the presence of witnesses never to speak or write of the transaction to a living person. In return for this, Sardine guarantees to pay her an annuity of 3,000 francs to be paid into her account in the National Bank of Switzerland in Brussels.
Why Brussels?
My stepmother had a little business there.
What sort of business?
It's difficult to explain, but it was good until war, and then, poof, everything break in small pieces. My stepmother died. Girls all ran away.
Girls?
My stepsisters.
And you, where did you go?
Dublin. Arlen neutral country. That's where I meet Flanagan. But I come back after war to Brussels. Then Flanagan leave me. I try to find Sorodin. No Sorodin. I work most hard to live and eat well. Then at last I come back here and find Sorodin.
When?
5 years ago. He shout at me. I bite him. He give me 1,000,000 francs. I take. And now he dies.
1,000,000 francs? Well, that's £1,000, isn't it?
Oh, I exchange most rotten.
How much do you want, Madame Pavlikoff?
Money vulgar. I prefer not discuss.
You realize, of course, that this letter is not in any way legal.
Not legal, maybe, but most fine joke for press.
How much do you want?
I will ask lawyer.
You will do no such thing.
Jacob, I am sure we will be able to come to some reasonable arrangement with Princess Pavlikoff.
It is sheer blackmail.
It is business, Mr. Friedland.
If you will deliver the original of this letter to me at my office, Saint-Sensis Boulevard Haussmann, within 3 days, I will draw up a contract guaranteeing you 500,000 francs a year for the rest of your life.
Gentlemen,
barmy! Be quiet and leave this to me. Well, madame?
Belgian francs?
Certainly not. French francs.
Then no, agree. French francs, most shifty. Up one day, down next, government change and wallop.
You rang, monsieur.
No, I did not.
How extraordinary. I made sure I heard a bell. It must have been Notre Dame. Madame would like me to escort her to her car.
Car?
Oh, yes, monsieur. I have been having a little chat with Madame Chauffeur. A most interesting man.
What have you said, you and Chauffeur?
We found we had a great deal in common.
The offer you made just now, Monsieur Friedland, is definite.
Yes.
Then I accept.
Excuse me, Mr. Friedland, but I venture to suggest that it is a little late in the evening to make final decisions. In the morning, Monsieur, when the brain is clearer and the sun is shining, matters, even business matters, assume quite a different aspect.
He make offer before witnesses. I accept before witnesses. No more fiddle-faddle. It is settled.
Oh, no, it is not.
You and Chauffeur, what was said between you?
You must pray to pray the near. Oh, pray that for a
story, sir.
It's on my old yellow.
The yoti. It's in Yeskinigda.
What is all this, Sebastian?
You're not listen. He's stinking liar.
Oh, dear. I do hope there isn't going to be any unpleasant.
I told you not to trust him.
Sebastian, tell me the truth. Have you ever met Madame before?
No, monsieur.
You weren't here when she called on my father some years back?
Alas, no, Miss Jane. I happened to be staying with friends in Barbizon for the weekend. On my return, however, I gathered that a fairly stormy interview had taken place.
How did you gather that?
Marie-Celeste was hysterical, Mr. Sorodine's left arm was severely lacerated, and the sofa had been sent away to be recovered.
You and Chauffeur, what you talk about?
The past.
The past? What do you mean?
I have a bottle of brandy in my room, monsieur. It was a birthday present from Mr. Sorodine. I cannot bear to drink alone. Marie-Celeste has gone to bed, so I invited Madame Chauffeur to share it with me.
What you say? Tell me swiftly.
Brandy induces a mood of delightful nostalgia. Very mellowing. Inhibitions are released. Lost years can be recaptured without regret.
Come to the point, please. You knew this man before.
Oh, yes. Egmont and I are old friends.
Egmont?
Egmont Vasquier. He was a garage mechanic, a bluff, cheerful fellow, but inclined to become violent when crossed in any way. He was also a trifle unscrupulous in regard to money. Oh. That is really why they jugged him.
Jugged him?
Oh, yes. Yes, that is how we first met in the late 30s. By the strangest coincidence, we happened to occupy the same prison cell in the Congo.
Oh, you are a dirty, filthy, blackguardly peasant.
Madame,
your accent stinks like the fish market in Odessa. And if my great-uncle Vladimir Pavlikovich were here, he would send you bouncing in a mule cart to the salt mines of Siberia. Zvinya! 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 Zvinya!
Hello, ici Anvelie 2645. Ah, Mr. Friedland. Yes, it is all arranged. The camion will be at Saint-Cloud the first thing in the morning. I will be there myself to supervise everything and return here in it with the cameras. Ah, certainly, sir, you may rely on me. Yes, sir, a short while ago. Mr. Elmore P. Riskin is at the Lancaster, Sir Alaric Craigie at the Crillon. I told them both that you will communicate with them personally. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, the interview went off most satisfactorily this morning. Madame La Princesse became rather violent at one moment, attempted to bite my thigh, but Egmont and I managed to calm her down. Egmont is a very sensible man. He is perfectly prepared to settle for French francs, unlike myself, who prefers a more stable currency such as dollars. Pray keep calm, Mr. Friedland. Yes. Yes, they both went back to Brussels on the afternoon plane and will return to Paris tomorrow with the document. Yes, sir, not at all, sir. Very good, sir.
Good afternoon, Sebastian.
Oh, good afternoon, Miss Jane. I did not hear the bell.
I came on before the others because I wanted to have a little talk with you.
I am both flattered and charmed, Miss Jane. Can I offer you any refreshment?
No, thank you. Now then.
I am all attention, Miss Jane.
I don't doubt that for a moment. You strike me as being a very alert character.
Mademoiselle is too kind.
Also a fairly unscrupulous one.
That is correct.
Will you answer one question absolutely honestly?
That rather depends on what the question is.
Were you genuinely fond of my father?
Yes, Miss Jane. I was. You may really believe that.
Thank you, Sebastian. I do. I too was fond of him in my own mind, although I can barely remember him. My mother accuses me of taking a romantic view of him. Am I wrong?
Of course not. You would have adored him. And if I may say so, I know that he would have adored you. He was a man of remarkable character, full of charm, vitality, irrepressible humor. Also, he was devoted to pleasure, which in Christian communities is always suspect.
Why did he perpetrate this gigantic hoax?
Because he was the victim of an obsession that tormented him all his life.
What sort of obsession?
A fanatical, burning hatred of dishonesty.
You can hardly expect me to believe that when his whole career was founded on a deliberate lie.
Nevertheless, it is true. He loathed cant, jargon, intellectual snobbism, the commercializing of creative talent. Successful art dealers, critics, so-called experts were his bête noire. His detestation of them was almost pathological.
But why? Why should he have minded so much?
Creative talent was his god. Far and away above everything else, he loved good paintings.
If he loved good paintings so much, how could he possibly have done what he did?
He was a crusader.
Crusader? Really, Sebastian?
What I'm telling you is the truth, Miss Jane.
Well, it's hard to believe.
Please try. It is most important.
Why?
Because of all your family, you are the only one he would have wanted to share the joke with him.
How can you possibly know that?
Because I knew him. Probably better than anyone else. And because since yesterday I have had the pleasure of knowing you.
Thank you, Sebastian.
Have I convinced you?
There is still a great deal that I find difficult to understand. Why, for instance, should he have gone to all that trouble and expense of paying that Russian woman to paint his pictures for him when he could quite easily have done them himself?
If he had painted them himself, they would no longer have been fakes.
How do you mean?
Mr. Friedland, all the nabobs of the art world would have been able to uphold their verdict by saying that he was a genius, whether he knew it or not. And like so many other men of abnormal creative power, unbalanced.
Thank you. So much for clarifying the situation for me, at least a little.
You are still not convinced.
I still believe you know a good deal more than you pretend to know.
How right you are, Miss Jane. But we are friends, aren't we?
Yes, Sebastian. We are friends. But there is still one question that is puzzling me.
And what is that?
Princess Pavlikov left my father in 1929.
Mm-hmm.
Who painted the rest of his pictures?
In the idiom of our American cousins, Miss Jane, search me.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, poor Jacob. I really am very sorry for him.
Mr. Friedland is certainly in a most unenviable position. We must all do everything we can to help him, mustn't we?
You don't like Mr. Friedland, do you, Sebastian?
I share your father's opinion of him. He said he was a pompous, plausible, double-crossing old weasel. Excuse me, miss.
Can't Marie-Celeste open the door?
Mademoiselle.
Sebastian.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think Mr. Friedland knows anything about painting?
I don't think that anyone knows anything about painting anymore. Art, like human nature, has got out of hand.
Is Mr. Jacob Friedland here?
No, madame.
They said at his office that he would be.
Have you an appointment with him, madame?
No, but I must see him. It's terribly important. I'm Cherry May Waterson. Who are you?
My name is Sebastian. I was the late Mr. Sorodine's valet.
Fancy dear old Paul having a valet. And a posh place like this. Oh, he did come up in the world, didn't he?
You knew my father?
My God. Are you Paul's daughter? Oh, I'm a fool not to have recognized you at once as a strong likeness. Oh, I hope I'm not intruding, but it really is important that I see Mr. Friedland. I've got a paper here that will interest him.
A paper, oh dear.
Perhaps Madame would like to sit down. We are expecting Monsieur Friedland at any moment.
Ah, thanks. That's very civil of you. My friend Fabrice and I have been jogging along in that god-awful bus since lunchtime yesterday. I've left him outside. He's sweet, and he doesn't miss a trick.
Where have you come from?
Orville-les-Champs, just the other side of Bordeaux. Fabrice's mother runs a little cafe-restaurant there. He's the apple of her eye. She gets him down a bit sometimes. Well, that's why we're here, really. I mean, I think Mr. Friedland might be willing to help.
In what way?
Well, Fabrice wants a chicken farm, imagine.
This paper, you have it with you?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's in my bag. Only a copy, of course. The original is in Barclays Banks and Jean de Luz.
Of course.
You knew my father well.
You bet I did. I was potty about him for nearly 7 years. Well, that's why I left the Jackson girls.
Jackson girls?
Yes, we were working here at the Casino de Paris. As a matter of fact, you know, they're still at it. We're not the same ones, natural. My lot must have fallen apart years ago.
When did you first meet him, my father?
Oh, let's see now. It was March or February 1930. Yes, it must have been March, because I was sharing that flat in the Rue Washington with Elsie Williams. She was a hot number if ever I saw one. Oh, men! Nothing but men, morning, noon and night. I used to call the joint the Travellers Club.
My father was in love with you?
Oh, yes, I think so. For a little while, at least. Well, anyway, I let him persuade me to go racketing off to Shanghai with him. More fool me. I didn't know what I was in for.
How do you mean?
Well, I'd rather not go on about all that just now. I mean, seeing that this young lady is his daughter, well, it wouldn't be quite the thing, would it?
You needn't worry about sparing my feelings, Miss Waterton. I haven't seen my father since I was 3 years old. You say you went to Shanghai with him.
Oh, yes, we had a high old time. That is, at first.
And afterwards?
Well, now, look here. You and me are friends, aren't we, dear?
I hope so.
But I wouldn't want to say anything or do anything to upset you. Your father was a very funny man with funny ideas. We had a good time together, taken by and large, and it was my fault we parted, not his. I just couldn't stand the wear and tear.
You mean he made you paint pictures?
Oh, my God. So, you know,
I guessed. That's what the paper's about, isn't it?
The paper doesn't concern you, dear. That's Mr. Friedland's lookout.
Had you ever painted before?
Of course not. Oh, and I could only paint then when I'd had a few drinks. Paul used to say that alcohol released my dormant genius. That was the phrase he used, and I'll never forget it. Finally, he made me drink so much that I got jaundice. You ever had jaundice?
No.
It's awful. Oh, everything happens in technicolor.
Dear. When did you part?
August 1939, just before the war.
And where?
Cairo. He had one of those scenes. Oh, dear, he certainly could create all right when he got going. You have never heard such a noise. Screaming and roaring and throwing things about. Well, I'm not blaming him, mind you. Oh, he treated me very fair. That is when he calmed down.
You signed the paper in Cairo?
No, portside. It was witnessed by an Arab conjurer and a gentleman from the Lebanon.
Did they read it?
Oh, no, they couldn't read English. The conjurer had a bit of fun with it, though. He turned it into an egg, and then into a rabbit. I must say, I couldn't help laughing, but poor old Paul was fit to be tied.
I'd rather see his point. Did he pay you a lump sum down or give you an annuity?
Now, just you ask no questions, sonny boy, and you'll hear no lies. That's Mr. Friedland's business. I've said too much already.
Anyhow, you parted good friends.
Oh, yes. Yes, he packed me onto a P&O, and that was that. I could see he was upset. Well, I was, too. I cried all through lunch.
Here are the others.
There you are, Jane. I couldn't think what had happened to you.
Oh, this is Miss Cherry Mae Waterson, Mother. She was a great friend of Father's.
How do you do?
How do you do?
My brother and his wife... and Mr. Friedland.
Mr. Friedland, what? There you are.
Miss Waterton wishes to see you on urgent business, Mr. Friedland. It concerns, I suspect, Mr. Sorodine's secular period.
What?
She has with her a document.
What sort of document?
The usual sort.
Listen, there, sonny boy. You just leave this to me. It's a private matter.
If it concerns my late father, it concerns all of us.
Ah, that is for Mr. Friedland to decide after he's read it.
Give it to me, please.
Not here. If it's all the same to you, as I said before, it's a private matter. And it's going to be discussed privately or not at all.
We wish to see that paper here and now. So please hand it over without further argument.
Well, look who's talking. A chip off the old block and no mistake. Must have his own way when he wants it and where he wants it. Double quick pronto. Yes, well, I've got news for you, young man. I didn't come all this way to be browbeaten. And you can put that where the monkey put the nut.
Just a moment, Colin.
We know it's blackmail and we've no time to waste.
Oh, using nasty words now, are we? We'll be throwing the furniture about in a minute if I know the form. I'm off.
You are not leaving this house until we have seen that document.
Colin, dear, there's no necessity to raise your voice. If this Cherry wishes to discuss the matter privately with Jacob, I think she should be allowed to.
Excuse me, madame.
I think Colin's perfectly right. The paper concerns us all.
Now, yes. You stay out of this, dear, unless you want trouble, bad trouble.
Really, Miss, whatever your name is, I'm not accustomed to being spoken to in that tone.
The name is Waterton, dear, Cherry Mae Waterton, and now you know, so you can shut up, can't you?
How dare you!
I don't care who you are or what you're accustomed to, I'm just warning you, see? Oh. And I'd like to call your high and mighty attention to my young friend outside. Just take a good look out of the window at those shoulders, dear. And if you don't want to see that pompous, fat-headed husband of yours laid out flat as a pancake, no, you'll
Colin,
keep a civil dear. Tongue in your head.
I will, you,
I'm not dear. Afraid of your damn gigolo! I won't.
Monsieur Obadiah Fluellen.
My God, the Jamaican period.
I think you ought to try to eat something, Mother. You've had nothing since lunch, and you only just picked at that egg thing.
It had garlic in it.
Jane, why do you keep on badgering people to eat when they don't want to?
Well, you didn't need any badgering anyway, Colin. You've been stuffing yourself for the last half hour.
Oh, why can't we all go back to the hotel?
Because, Pamela, we can't leave until we know what's happening in the library.
Sebastian and that Jamaican have been at it for ages.
Oh, I wish I knew what was going on.
I should have handled it. It would have been far better.
Oh, Colin.
What? With his oafish lack of consideration for other people's feelings. You were overbearing and rude and quite insufferable to Miss Waterton, Colin.
I thought she was a horror.
And she thought you were a pretentious ass, so you were quits, weren't you?
Jane!
Poor woman, indeed. She was nothing but a common tart, and the man outside was quite obviously a pimp.
Once and for all, Colin, I will not have you using those expressions in my presence. This isn't a barrack room.
I wish to God it was.
I don't like blasphemy either.
I'm afraid the army has coarsened you dreadfully. You used to be so well-mannered and gentle when you were a little boy.
That's what you think, Mother.
And now you seem to be growing more and more like your Uncle Edward every day.
It's not fair of you to say that. Colin isn't the least like Uncle Edward. And anyway, Uncle Edward would never have been cashiered if it hadn't been for that Mrs. Faulkner.
I don't really feel that we need argue about Uncle Edward and Mrs. Faulkner at the moment, Pamela. We have rather more important matters to discuss.
I never knew what he saw in her.
The fact remains that if Colin had not started throwing his weight about and insulting Cherry May Waterton, she and her young man wouldn't have rushed off, leaving us with no possible means of tracing them.
Well, I, for one, don't see any necessity for tracing them. Let them both go, and a good job.
I should have thought, Pamela, that by now even you could have dimly understood that it is vitally important for us to get that document from her and destroy it.
And give her an income for life, I suppose. There won't be any estate left at this rate.
She only wanted a chicken farm.
Chicken farm? What on earth would a woman of that type do with a chicken farm?
Presumably what people usually do with chicken farms, raise chickens. It's for her young man, anyhow. She wants to set him up in life. She was perfectly frank and honest about it. And rather touching, really, until Colin started bullying her and calling her a blackmailer.
Frank and honest, indeed. I know just how frank and honest that type of woman can be.
It's silly to keep on calling her that type of woman when you don't know anything about her. She ran away with Father years ago because she loved him. She was one of the Jackson girls.
Oh, no, she wasn't, dear. I knew all three of them when they were young. Veronica, the eldest, came out at the same time as your Aunt Frieda. I don't think the other two ever came out at all on account of the war.
Oh, Sebastian, what's happened?
Nothing has happened. Nothing at all.
You should have let me handle the Jamaican.
I fear that even your overwhelming persuasiveness would not have achieved any better results, monsieur.
Mm. Have you got the paper?
Alas, no, monsieur, I have not.
Have you read it?
Yes. It is more or less the same as the others.
How much did you offer him?
He is not interested in money. He is a Seventh-day Adventist.
Oh, dear, that's very unfortunate.
He is a man of strong religious principles, and men of strong religious principles are notoriously uncooperative. Look at Thomas A. Becket.
I wouldn't describe Thomas A. Becket as uncooperative, exactly. He was
Isabel, Thomas A. Becket's problems were settled several hundred years ago. Our problems are more immediate. Will you please permit us to concentrate on them?
There's no need to snap at me, Jacob. I really don't know what's happening to everybody today.
What did Llewellyn come here with the paper for if he didn't want to get something out of it?
He intends to publish it.
Oh. Publish it? Oh, no.
Oh, yes. His conscience has been troubling him for a long time. And when he read in the newspaper of Sorodine's death, the news so shattered him that he ran out naked into a banana plantation and had a vision.
What sort of vision?
A vision of your late husband, Madame, roasting in hell.
Good gracious.
It upset him so much that he caught the next plane available and came here.
But why?
He wishes to save your father's soul, monsieur.
He's left it a bit late, hasn't he?
He considers that he was to blame in the first place for having allowed himself to be coerced into painting the pictures.
He really did paint them?
Oh, yes. Everyone. He was responsible for the whole of the Jamaican period.
What have I done? What have I ever done to deserve this?
His personal favorite is Copra Factory at Sunset, the one that is at present in the Royal Gallery in Copenhagen.
Is copra that stuff they get from seagulls?
No, madame. Copra is produced by the cocoa palm.
I implore you, Isabel, in this moment of crisis, to turn your thoughts away from guano.
Guano?
Mr. Llewellyn is firmly convinced that Mr. Sorodine's soul will never achieve proper celestial recognition until the deception is exposed and the sin expiated.
The poor chap's obviously a religious maniac.
Possibly, monsieur. At any rate, he is quite unshakable.
What's he doing now?
Praying for guidance in the library. He may start singing at any moment.
I hope to God he doesn't.
Some Negroes have lovely voices.
He refused absolutely to take money.
Absolutely.
The document is a copy, I presume.
As a matter of fact, it is not. He left a copy in the Bank of Nova Scotia, Port Maria, Jamaica.
You mean you actually had the original in your hand?
Ah, no. He was very cunning. He only let me have a quick glance at it to identify the handwriting. Then he made me stand at the other side of the room while he read it aloud to me. I did note, however, that he kept it in his wallet, which is something gained at any rate.
What do you mean, Sebastian?
I mean that it might be possible to extract it if all else fails. I have a friend here in Paris who is adept at that sort of thing.
That's quite out of the question, Sebastian.
Needs must when the devil drives, miss.
You say this friend of yours is here in Paris?
Jacob.
Yes, monsieur. He was a great chum of Mr. Sorodine's. They used to go to race meetings together.
A common pickpocket?
No, no, sir. He only does it as a hobby. He is actually a pianist by profession. He says it keeps his fingers supple.
Was he another of your brother prisoners in the Congo?
No, sir. In Johannesburg. Excuse me?
That man's utterly without shame.
I envy him.
I must say, I didn't expect to come to Paris and get caught up with the underworld.
I always understood that that was the average Englishman's main object in coming to Paris.
I had to come back because I couldn't bear to let the sun go down on my roll.
Oh,
besides, I left my hat behind. Oh, Tom, Mr. Friedland.
Yeah.
No, I lost my temper and it's no use pretending I didn't. I hope you will accept my apology in the spirit in which it's offered, young man.
Oh, well, that's perfectly all right.
Ah, now we're all friends again, aren't we?
I am sure that this most heartwarming amende honorable calls for some refreshment. Can I offer you a drink, Miss Waterton?
Thanks, I don't mind if I do.
Champagne?
Oh, no. Champagne gives me the come-ups. No, a whiskey splash if it's not too much trouble.
Memsie.
I hope you're enjoying your stay in Paris, Mrs. Sorodine.
Well, I'm afraid that in the present circumstances...
Oh, dear, there I go again, putting my foot into it up to the neck. I ought to have my head examined.
Without wishing to disrupt this rather convulsive flow of social amenities, Miss Waterton, I think it would be a good idea to return to the business in hand.
You mean the paper?
Yes. Have you got it?
Yes, here in my bag.
I fully understand your reluctance to discuss so private a matter in the presence of Paul Sorodine's family.
I don't wish to seem carping, dear, but if only you'd said that before, we'd all have been saved a lot of fuss and fume.
Your whiskey splash, Miss Waterton.
Oh, ta.
I understand from Miss Jane Sorodine that you wish to invest in a small chicken farm.
I didn't say anything about it being small.
Well, assuming that everything else is satisfactorily arranged, I really feel that the exact acreage can be discussed later.
Well, it isn't for me, anyway. Personally, I can't bear the bloody things. Pardon my French, Mrs. Sorodin.
Oh, I fear my own French is sadly inadequate. I always regretted that my parents didn't send me to a convent when I was a child. My sister Frida, on the other hand, speaks it like a native. When she was 17, she was sent to Geneva to be finished.
No, I should think Geneva would be enough to finish anybody.
Although at any other time I should be the first to welcome an intelligent discussion of the League of Nations.
We've almost formed one ourselves now, anyhow, haven't we?
Colin, how can you?
God, give me strength.
Jacob, please.
That was not intended as blasphemy, Isabel. It was a last despairing cry from a tormented man who's been driven step by step into a nervous collapse. I have tried to keep my head in this appalling situation. I have struggled against overwhelming odds to deal sanely and practically with the problems that beset us. For your sake, Isabel, as well as for my own. And have I received the slightest cooperation? The answer is no, 1,000 times no. During these pregnant hours, I have been regaled by descriptions of your sister Frida and her linguistic abilities, the mystic attributes of your father, Confessor, the misdemeanors of your brother, Edward, with a Mrs.
Faulkner.
And when Sebastian emerged from the library a little while ago, you, Isabel, were engrossed in the social frustrations of the Jackson girls.
What's the matter with the Jackson girls?
One of them came out and the other two didn't.
I bet that was Elsie Williams. She was always a pusher. Out of what?
I give up. I'm defeated. I can do no more and say no more. I'm a broken man.
Give Mr. Friedland a whiskey and soda, Sebastian.
Certainly, Miss Jane.
I'm sure I don't know what I've done that Jacob should attack me in that hysterical manner.
Never mind, darling. He's having a very trying time.
So are we.
Your whiskey, Mr. Friedland.
Thanks.
Well, if you ask me, I think he was very rude indeed. Why shouldn't Mother talk about Aunt Frieda and the Jackson girls as much as she wants to?
Yeah, what is all this about the Jackson girls?
It's a slight misunderstanding, Miss Waterton.
Oh?
With regard to that chicken farm, Miss Waterton...
What about it?
If Mr. Friedland made you a satisfactory offer, would you be willing to hand over the paper that Mr. Sorodine made you sign?
I might be willing to consider.
And would you also agree to sign another paper with Mr. Friedland and his lawyer guaranteeing to keep the whole matter entirely secret?
Yes, that is if, as you say, the offer Mr. Friedland makes me is satisfactory.
Good.
But the paper's in Saint-Jean-de-Luz, you know, the real one.
In that case, after your conversation with Mr. Friedland in his office tomorrow morning, would you and Monsieur Fabrice be willing to go to Biarritz, collect the document, and fly back here with it within 24 hours?
Oh, well, I don't know about that. Flying gives me the willies.
Perhaps if your expenses were handsomely defrayed, you might bring yourself to endure the Willies?
All right. Anything would be better than that smelly bath.
You know where Mr. Friedland's office is?
Yes, we went there this morning.
Would 10 o'clock tomorrow be convenient to you, Mr. Friedland?
If I'm not in a straitjacket, yes.
My God, what's that?
A friend of ours from the West Indies.
It's a good, strong voice, isn't it? Is he a pro?
Pro what?
He is practicing for a religious concert he is giving in Jamaica in the very near future.
Oh, well, I'll push off now.
Goodbye, Miss Waterton. I do hope we shall meet again someday.
So do I, dear. You must come to see us at our chicken farm. We'll give you a nice new laid egg. Goodbye, Mrs. Sorrenton. It's been a pleasure, I'm
sure. Goodbye, Miss Cherry.
See you tomorrow, Mr. Friedland. I once knew a man in Belfast with a voice just like that. His name was Flanagan. Bye-bye, all.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Surely there must be one person in Ireland called O'Reilly.
I really can't stand this any longer. This noise is going through my head like a knife.
All right, Mother. Pam and I will take you back to the hotel. Come on.
The coast are in the hall.
I shall go straight to bed.
What are we to do about Mr. Llewellyn, Jacob?
Leave it all to me, Miss Jane. You can rest assured that I will handle Mr. Llewellyn with the greatest tact.
Oh, dear. I don't like it. I really don't.
Yeah, so what are you going to do, Sebastian?
I have not the faintest idea. I always allow circumstances to dictate my course of action in a crisis. Improvisation is my strong suit. I will telephone you first thing in the morning, Mr.
Yes, but...
Good night, Miss Friedland. Oh,
well, good night.
Is she sans conseil, sans conseil? Hello? Hello, ici Sébastien. Oui, très bien, merci. Joëlla? Bon, j'attends. Joe? Ah, Joe. Pop around here. There's a good boy. There's a bit of trouble on, and I need your help. No, no. No knives or firearms necessary. It is just a question of finesse. You might slip a cosh into your pocket in case of unforeseen developments. Okay.
Where is Mr. Friedland, Sebastian? He told us to meet him here this morning.
I am expecting him at any moment, my darling.
I hope he won't be late. We're catching the 1 o'clock plane.
Good Lord! Look at this canvas, Pam!
Look, Jane! Oh! Oh, no! It can't be true!
I mean... Is that the picture they're coming to see? The one they're making all the fuss about? You with violin?
It is, sir.
Oh, Mother, you really must look.
No, dear, really, I'd rather...
No, I insist.
No, no, I really... Oh!
Oh!
Oh, Jacob, I'm sorry, I can't help
you. Oh, it's the picture, Jacob. Beautiful violin. We've just seen it.
Oh, do stop thumping my bed, Jacob. You knock my hat off.
Throw yourself in the bell, for heaven's sake. Have you all gone mad?
Hysteria has set in, I am afraid, with you.
Oh, dear. Oh, we'll be all right in a minute, Jacob. Just give us a little time.
I haven't closed my eyes all night. My whole world is crashing round me, and I find you all in hysterics.
Oh, we couldn't help it. Now, really, we couldn't.
Cheer up, monsieur. I have good news for you. Mr. Obadiah Llewellyn is at this moment on his way back to Jamaica.
What?
I tried to telephone you first thing this morning, but your line was out of order.
The paper. What about the paper? What happened last night?
He tore it up, monsieur.
He tore it up? What do you mean?
It took rather a long while to get him into the right mood, but we succeeded ultimately.
We?
Before attempting to reason with Mr. Llewellyn, I took the precaution of telephoning to a few of my friends. I felt it wise to be prepared for any eventuality.
You didn't do anything to him, did you, Sebastian?
Oh, no, Miss Jane. As a matter of fact, the boot was on the other foot.
What are you talking about?
It was he who did something to us.
What do you mean? What could he do to you?
He saved us, monsieur.
Oh, saved you?
Yes. That is, we encouraged him to believe that he had.
What the hell are you talking about?
When I went into the library last night after Mr. Friedland had left, I was prepared, if gentle persuasion proved unavailing, to extract the document by force.
Oh, Sebastian, how horrid of you.
I had no intention of hurting him, Miss Jane. I merely intended, with the assistance of my friends, to overpower him, remove the paper from his wallet, and see to it that he was firmly escorted to all the airfields and sent back to Jamaica.
The poor man, how could you?
Fortunately, however, such a drastic course of action turned out to be unnecessary.
Go on, what happened?
As you may remember, monsieur, Mr. Llewellyn had been singing for some time before you left.
He was bellowing his lungs out.
When I entered the library, Mr. Llewellyn was not only singing himself into an ecstatic trance, but he was also undressing.
Undressing? Whatever for?
A not uncommon Freudian impulse, madame.
A sort of revivalist striptease.
Oh, God, in your dreams! I hope you stopped him.
Oh, no, madame. That would have been most dangerous. All I could do in the circumstances was to fold his garments neatly as he discarded them and let him rip.
Did he take everything off?
Everything but his glasses, madame.
Oh, very surprising. He looked such a mild, respectable man. There's no accounting for what people will do nowadays.
Go on, Sebastian. What happened then?
Oh, from then on, everything was easy. When my friends arrived, he stopped singing and invited us to join him in prayer. And taken by and large, the service went off very well.
Service?
Not, perhaps, according to accepted professional standards, but quite satisfactory within its limits. Then Mr. Llewellyn exhorted us to see the light, to which we agreed unanimously, and finally, after a little reasonable persuasion from me, he agreed to destroy the paper as an act of faith.
Well, I'll be damned.
I took the liberty on your behalf, Mr. Friedland, of promising him a new stained glass window for his church.
What?
I told him that the money would be cabled to Jamaica immediately.
How much?
His rough estimate amounted to £35.17.6.
Oh.
I suggested that £50 would be safer in case of unforeseen extras.
Oh, thank you, Sebastian. You did very well. I'm very grateful.
Monsieur.
I presume he dressed again before going to the airport.
Oh, yes, madame. When his ecstasy subsided, he became quite normal. He actually complained of the climate being a bit nippy.
I'm beginning to see why my father was so fond of you, Sebastian. You are certainly resourceful.
Mademoiselle is most flattering.
What do we do now?
How do we?
The three great periods of my father's painting have been accounted for and disposed of. The Farouche, the Circular, and the Jamaican. What about the fourth?
The fourth? Miss Jane?
That is precisely what's been keeping me awake all night.
That monstrosity over there. Who painted nude with violin?
Your directness of approach does you credit, Miss Jane.
Tell me, Sebastian, did you paint it yourself?
Ah, I thought that was in your mind, Miss Jane.
Oh, stop beating about the bush, Sebastian. Did you or didn't you?
No, monsieur, I did not.
Well, if you didn't, who in heaven's name did?
Then it's true.
What is that for?
Lauderdale! Why are you not at school?
How could you do such a cruel, wicked thing? You've broken your promise.
Control yourself, Lauderdale. Forgive this abrupt intrusion, madame. This is my son.
Your son?
Dis bonjour gentiment, Lauderdale.
I won't. What a dear little boy. Why is he called Lauderdale?
His mother had ideas above her station. She was a Lithuanian refugee who ultimately settled in Cheltenham.
I'll never forgive you. Never, never, never. Oh, why are you crying, little boy?
Because my father's a bastard.
As a matter of fact, that is about the only thing we have in common.
Well, really? I hardly...
Now run away, Lauderdale, like a good little boy. I will explain everything later.
You promised on your word of honor not to show the picture to anyone until it was finished.
I'm beginning to understand.
Good God! Do you mean... Young man, was it you who painted that picture?
Of course it was. It's my masterpiece. Had to do quite a lot of it on a ladder. Oh, Father, how could you? How could you?
My son has painted ever since he was 7 years old, monsieur. On three different occasions, his pictures have been shown at l'Exposition d'Art d'Enfant. One was actually reproduced in an art magazine.
Vilain! Goujon! Tu me trahis! Tu me trahis!
Je vais tout expliquer un peu plus tard, mais t'es quand même...
You say that one of his pictures was reproduced in a magazine?
Yes, monsieur, but you need not be alarmed. It was only a little watercolor pastoral of an ox pulling a cart. Anyhow, it was painted under a nom de plume.
What the devil does it matter whose name it was painted under? This is dangerous.
Calm yourself, monsieur. Calm yourself. No one could possibly connect this chef d'œuvre with a wishy-washy little watercolour.
What do you mean, wishy-washy? It won a prize, didn't it?
Now, look here, Lauderdale. This picture is my property, finished or unfinished. You have been well paid for it.
Well paid. 200 francs and a box of crystallised fruit.
And a matinee at the Opera Comique.
It was only the Tales of Hoffman.
Be that as it may, if you do not go immediately to your room and wait there until I come to you, I shall pack you off tomorrow to your mother in Cheltenham, and you know you would hate that.
But, Papa...
Do as I say. At once. Va-t'en.
But the painting isn't finished. Won't you please let me fix it? The right breast's all wrong.
Both breasts are all wrong. Go away.
I'll never paint another picture for you again. Never, as long as I live.
Don't you be too sure of that now. Run along now.
Don't touch me. I hate you. You have no soul.
Poor little chap.
Sebastian, Dick. Do you mean to tell me that that child painted that picture unaided?
Yes, monsieur, under my supervision. His colour sense is not yet fully developed, his draftsmanship still leaves a lot to be desired, but he is a diligent boy. And when he grows up and matures, he should go far.
No farther than Wormwood Scrubs.
The other canvases, of course, are more abstract.
Other canvases?
Yes. About 30, all told. Mr. Sorodine signed them all.
This is grotesque!
He described them as his neo-infantilism period. He dearly loved a good joke.
Where are they?
They are in a warehouse in Passy, monsieur.
They must be destroyed immediately.
I think not, monsieur. That would be a futile gesture of vandalism. If judiciously placed on the market during the next few years, they should fetch anything up to £100,000. I have already insured them for 80,000.
You have insured them?
Yes, monsieur, they are my property. Mr. Sorodine assigned them to me to dispose of as I saw fit. He suggested that you and I might come to some sort of arrangement.
I'll see you damned first. I'd expose the whole abominable swindle.
Oh, wouldn't that be a little inconsistent, seeing that you have already paid off Princess Pavlikoff, Miss Waterton, and Mr. Fluellen? I really do advise you to think carefully, Mr. Friedland. If you expose the whole abominable swindle, as you call it, you also expose yourself to the ridicule of the world.
On behalf of my mother and my family, I'd like to say that I entirely agree with Mr. Friedland. The scandal must be exposed, and we must face the consequences. Don't you agree, Mother?
Yes, I suppose so. But...
But what?
Well, I was thinking of that dear little boy. After all that work, he'll be dreadfully disappointed.
And not only will he be disappointed, the whole world of modern painting will be humiliated, impoverished. Many of the great masters, too, will be flung into disrepute. The finest pictures will be viewed with suspicion and distrust. If this news leaks out that the great Sorodine's masterpieces were painted by a Russian tart, an ex-Jackson girl, a Jamaican Seventh-day Adventist, and a boy of 14, the rot will spread like wildfire. Modern sculpture, music, drama, poetry will all shrivel in the Holocaust. Reputations will wither overnight. No one will be spared. Pause and consider, Mr. Friedland, before you unleash this chaos. It will not only be ridicule that you have to fear. It will be crucifixion. The dealers alone will see to that.
Ah,
here are two of them now.
What are you going to do, Jacob?
Is our little secret to be kept inviolate, Mr. Friedland, or laid wide open?
Come to my office this afternoon. We'll discuss it there.
Ah. And Sir Alaric and Mr. Riskin?
Show them in.
Very good, monsieur.
In Nude with Violin by Noel Coward, adapted for radio by Peggy Wells, Aubrey Woods played Sebastian, Joyce Carey, Isabel Sorodine, and Patricia Routledge, Jane. Anya Pavlikoff was played by Betty Huntley Wright, Cherry Mae Waterton by Barbara Mitchell, and Jacob Friedland by Wilfred Carter. Colin was Alan Cuthbertson, Pamela, Margaret Wolfitt, Lauderdale, Rufus Frampton, and Clinton Preminger Jr., Kerry Francis. The play was produced by Glyn Dearman.